morning, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf, Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds, Greg Jennings with us on a Thursday morning, by far the most underrated day of the week. That is my new hot take. You do look very good, Greg. Coming up on the show, why Tua should be the Dolphins' week one starter, why Shaq is going after Draymond Green, and why I'm about to make Nick Wright a very happy guy. That's where we start today. Our rewarding performance sponsored by Capital One Venture Card. What's in your wallet? Here we go. 3 months ago, Patrick Mahomes carried the Chiefs to their first Super Bowl in 50 years. Exactly 102 days later, that's today, that's what the Google told me, it appears one Lombardi trophy is just the beginning. A recent report came out saying several coaches believe the Kansas City Chiefs will be the next post-Patriots dynasty. Nick, you always say older people sometimes lie. Not this time, though, right?
Yeah, great point. Great point.
That is not what I say. First of all, the quote
that's exactly
is,
what you say.
And it's not going to take off the way it
older
needs to if you
fib.
Keep butchering it. It's old people be lying. In this case, the older people you're discussing might not be lying. However, are the Chiefs going to be the next post-Patriots dynasty?
Oh,
there you go. There's the quote. Thank you, Jenna. Remember it. But are the Chiefs going to be the next post-Patriots dynasty? If there is going to be one, it will certainly be the Chiefs. They are not only the number one draft pick, they are the only draft pick one would consider for the award, or for that title. However, dynasties in the NFL are incredibly hard to come by, and to be fair, commitment to take integrity. If we were on the air 6 years ago, I would have bet my entire net worth that Seattle was about to be the next dynasty. They had a superstar quarterback. They had this amazing core. I thought they were going to win at least two, if not three, Super Bowls. And I know a lot of people will say, well, they were this close. They were the closest a team has ever come to winning a Super Bowl without winning it. And that is true. But what's also true is the round before they even got to the Super Bowl, that Seattle team, they were down 12 points with 4 minutes left in the conference championship game against the Packers and need an amazing confluence of events just to make it back to the Super Bowl. Additionally, the NFL's made it harder, removing one of those buys. The last three dynasties we've had, the Patriots of the 10s, Patriots of the aughts, and the Cowboys of the 90s, in all nine of their Super Bowls, they had a bye all nine times. And now getting a bye is even harder. But Wilds, what I will say is this. You couldn't be better set up than Kansas City is. You have the best player and most valuable player in the entire league. You have a future Hall of Fame coach. You have an extraordinary GM in Brett Veach. You have your entire core locked up for the next two seasons at least, aside from Mahomes, and that'll happen in short order. So the Chiefs are set up well, and if we were to set the over-under on career Super Bowls for Patrick Mahomes at 2.5, I don't think there's a person in the world who is taking the under. So they are better set up than anyone, Wilds, but it is so incredibly difficult to do what your beloved Patriots did, which is probably why the Patriots needed the assistance of a couple cheating scandals in order to do it.
Oh, geez, you are so good. Oh, my goodness. That was like a 99% perfect take. And I was like, I was very excited to go at Nick. And I'm like, wow, I'm going to have to temper it down. Then you come in with a knife in my back. Okay, so here's what I think. You made a great point about the buys. I thought that was fascinating because I forgot about the buys. You guys aren't going to be able to get the buy every year like Belichick. Here's what I think is interesting. I've been a Patriots fan my entire life. But in the course of this dynasty, if you ask me to describe the dynasty, that's why people say it's Belichickian or it's Brady, because it's hard to just put one stamp on the dynasty and say, this is who they are. Now, the Chiefs, I think you know who the Chiefs are. They're like Will Ferrell. They're like beloved and great, but you know who you're going to get. Patriots, more like Daniel Day-Lewis. Who knows what you're going to get? Maybe he shows up, he'll be 300 pounds. Ooh. Maybe he'll be, emaciated. Maybe he's going to be old. Maybe he's going to be computer-generated young. So let's look at some of the Patriots seasons where they've been great and try to figure out what type of team they were. Here's a team. I put question marks. I gave it away. They're both the Patriots, everybody. First year, 0-3. Scoring defense, number one. Hey, how about this is a Super Bowl loss. We went 13-3. If not for Mario Manningham, we would have won. We had a great offense. All right, how about another? We'll do another blind resume. You'll be able to guess who this is, too. I kind of blew the joke here. Who are these two guys? This first guy seems pretty pedestrian. 18 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. The next guy seems like the best quarterback in the history of the world. Surprise, surprise, the guy on the left won the Super Bowl, and the guy on the right didn't because of a darn helmet catch. So the moral of the story, Jenna, is to be a Patriots dynasty or to be a dynasty, you have to be more of a chameleon like Belichick and not kind of like a Will Ferrell character like Knicks Chiefs are.
I love you so much for botching the blind reveal. You have no idea how endearing that was. But the truth is, you make a great point. We just don't know, Greg, right? We have no idea what the future holds. All you can say is the Chiefs have the foundation. The Chiefs have the chemistry. They have the coach. They seem to have the quarterback. You would think that if there was a team in the league right now that was going to fill the shoes of what the Patriots dynasty just left, it would be Kansas City. Would you not agree, Greg?
I would definitely agree. But one thing I would be cautioned of is how hard and challenging it is to just simply become a dynasty, to even start that process, which the Kansas City Chiefs have obviously started once you win a Super Bowl and you retain a number of personnel pieces that has allowed you to get to that point. However, what Wilds is saying is very true. Like the New England Patriots, they did it in a unique fashion. Yes, they had Tom Brady, who is arguably the greatest player, NFL player, quarterback, whatever you want to classify him as, of all time. But he wasn't the only piece that you would have to focus on in order for them to win. When you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, if you eliminate Patrick Mahomes, which we've seen with Aaron Rodgers, which we've seen with Drew Brees. We've seen quarterbacks go down and then the team look completely different. We've never really seen that with the New England Patriots. And I'm just cautious with the Kansas City Chiefs, although they are clearly the best quarterback in the sport right now in Patrick Mahomes. If anything were to happen with that at that position, everything changes for them. It's set up for them. It's just hard to do. I was on the team with the Green Bay Packers where we felt like we knew we had the best quarterback in all of football, the most talented, the most gifted, and we had a lot of pieces, but defensively we struggled. Offensively, we didn't have a running game, and we tried to allow Aaron to carry us, and it just never quite came to fruition as we thought. But it's a challenging thing to create a dynasty, but if there is a team that has the pedigree and the ingredients, it is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, Greg, I'm glad you referenced your time in Green Bay because we'd be remiss if we don't show some of the parallels here. Aaron obviously sat his first 3 years, so let's just eliminate those for a moment. Aaron's first year then as a starter, you guys missed the playoffs. His second year, you guys make the playoffs and lose a heartbreaking playoff game.
Yes.
It's 51-45, if I remember Arizona. Correctly, in overtime to Kurt Warner's Arizona Cardinals. Then you win the Super Bowl. The next year, you were 15-1. The only team that beat you actually was a terrible Chiefs team at Arrowhead Stadium, if I remember right. And then Eli got you guys in the famous game where Tom Coughlin looks like his nose was going to break off. So the Chiefs, year one for Mahomes, he doesn't really play. Year two, they lose a heartbreaking playoff game, the Dee Ford offsides game in overtime when maybe they could have won the Super Bowl, similar to your guys' 51-45 game. Year three, they win the Super Bowl. Year four, they are the favorites like you guys were, and it can go like that. So I do wonder, after the 15-1 year, when you guys felt like you were the best team in football and just had a bad day at the wrong time, going into the next year, did you have the same type of confidence that was around the team coming off the Super Bowl, even though you hadn't won it?
What's interesting, we did. We did have the same type of confidence all through the regular season. And where I would say it started to shift was in the playoffs, and the questions started to come. Well, I shouldn't say questions. The feeling started to be a little different because of the bye. Like the year we won it, there was no gap. There was no bye. We were the sixth seed, and we were on a roll at the end of the season, moving right into the playoffs. Where Kansas City has been impressive is they had a bye and they were able to sit and they were hot as an offensive team and still pick back up and keep rolling. Those are things that come back to bite you. We were hungry the first year. We had never won. We had never experienced that high. And so the following year, I truly remember it like it was yesterday. I remember our run, and it was like no one in that facility or that building had doubt that we were going to win a game. No one. But the second year, being 15-1 and then having the bye, we almost hated that we had the bye. Like, in that feeling was just slightly different. We knew we were a really good team. We felt like we were better than the Giants, but we know, just like in sport, every single day, anything can happen, and you want to continue that momentum while you're hot, and we just didn't. So it's the parallels that you make are extremely exciting to see. I hope their outcome is different than ours. I believe it can be, but there are a lot of teams that are going to try to make them look like how we looked in that second year to follow up that Super Bowl win.
And then one other thing to keep in mind, guys, is how much this team changes once Patrick Mahomes gets paid, which is going to happen. So we shall see. But we got to take a break now.
A healthy lifestyle should be easy, right? Eat veggies, drink green smoothies, exercise, get your heart rate up, and do yoga to bring your heart rate back down. Well, maybe not so easy, but there is something that helps improve everything, and you can literally do it with your eyes closed. It's sleep. Sleep Number knows what it takes to sleep your best. The Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed lets you choose your ideal firmness, comfort, and support on each side, your Sleep Number setting. It's the perfect solution for couples. These beds are so smart, they respond to your every move and automatically adjust to keep you sleeping comfortably all night. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. And now, for a limited time during the Memorial Day sale, save $1,000 on the new Sleep Number Special Edition Smart Bed, a queen, now only $1,799. You'll only find Sleep Number at Sleep Number stores or by visiting www.sleepnumber.com.
All right, let's play a little drawing a blank. Wherever you fall on Dak Prescott also, he still has just one career playoff win, but that's not stopping Emmitt Smith from heaping some high praise. The Cowboys Hall of Famer said there's no doubt, no doubt that Dak can carry Dallas to a Super Bowl. I mean, why not two if we're throwing out hot takes, Emmett? Nick, Emmitt Smith saying there's no doubt Dak can carry the Cowboys to a Super Bowl is blank.
An issue of semantics, and here's what I mean. I have no doubt that Dak Prescott could be the quarterback for a Super Bowl champion Dallas Cowboys team. But my issue with Emmett's statement is in the semantics of, would he be carrying them to a Super Bowl? If the Cowboys were to win the Super Bowl this year, I would imagine it would be because they have this extraordinary overall roster, great offensive line, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Ezekiel Elliott, obviously. I think a very underrated offseason addition of Gerald McCoy, that great linebacking core, and a good, if not great, quarterback in Dak. So I don't look at the Cowboys as a team that is going to be carried by their quarterback. I don't look at them as a team that's going to be held back by their quarterback either. I think he's kind of along for the ride, maybe leading intermittently. So to me, I know it's semantics. That's why I called it, Greg, an issue of semantics, whether he's carrying them or not.
Yeah, I agree. That's the key word. And that's why I say it's to be determined for me. When you look at last year and what Dak Prescott was able to do, one could say he carried that team, but it wasn't enough. It just simply wasn't enough. They were 8-8. He went 30 touchdowns to 11 interceptions, and he was the one sole bright spot with a few splashes of Amari Cooper there throughout the season, where you thought the Dallas Cowboys, they have a bright future with this young man. But he and his heroics was not enough to even get them into the playoffs. So to carry the team, which is what you're talking about, that's a bold, bold statement.
Huh. Well, Jenna, I want to shout out three people because once enough people get behind a concept, I just fall in line. It's kind of like those old toothbrush commercials where it's like 9 out of 10 orthodontists agree this is the best toothbrush. I'm like, oh, it must be a great toothbrush. So three people. The first one is Emmett Smith. It's like, hey, I had a dynasty. I know what it takes. I'm like, all right, I give that some credence. The second one is KD Drummond, NFL. Follow him on Twitter. I was supposed to shout him out yesterday, and I didn't because he's got all sorts of interesting things about the Cap and the Cowboys and parallels to the NBA. I didn't shout him out, so I'm shouting him out now. It's a great follow. He believes in Dak. The third one, America's best prognosticator, Nick Wright. It's got the Cowboys at 11-5. So we can be semantics, but those are three people who know what they're talking about who believe in Dak.
Me, you know who's not on your list?
The Dallas Cowboys themselves, which is why they're not throwing absolutely everything at Dak, and they are holding just a little bit back. But we got to get Wild's list expanded a little. All right, let's move on to Giants quarterback Daniel Jones now. So last year, the guy led the league with his 18 fumbles. But Daniel Jones said this year he's focused on ball security. Says it's a simple fix. Says it's all mindfulness. So is losing weight, Daniel. And I can tell you, I've been at it for 2 months, and all I've lost is 2 months. Nick, your guy Daniel Jones saying he's focused on ball security this season is blank.
Well, you know, Jenna, I'm going to do something, I guess, a little similar to what you did, except you obviously don't need to lose any weight. I'm going to 8-mile myself a bit here in my answer. Eminem's great battle with Papa Doc at the end. I'm going to say Daniel Jones saying he's focused on ball security this season is Nick's nose. And by that, I mean this. If I were to be like, hey, all quarantine, I realize one of the things holding me back in television is my nose. I've been working on it. That's great. Ain't going to do a damn thing. Nothing you can do about it. Daniel Jones, nothing you can do about this. You're the most fumbling fumbler I've ever seen fumble. You led the league in fumbles by an enormous margin. You're just dropping the football. You lost 11. No one else lost more than 7. You fumbled the ball 18 times in less than, you didn't even start the full season. So you can work on it, and I understand why you'd want to work on it. It is your Achilles heel, if you will, but I don't see it fixing. And when you start the season off, I don't have my schedule in front of me. My laminated schedule's out of reach. You play San Francisco, you play Chicago, you play the Rams. There's another excellent defense that you got to deal with. I feel like you're just going to be fumbling all over the place. So, no, I don't buy it, Greg Jennings.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Nick. This is elementary. And what I mean by that is this is 101. Like at quarterback, the number one rule of thumb is to protect the football. Before you ever hand it off, throw it in the air, you got to protect the football. And this is something that he did not do. And I hope that he can get better. But just like he's going to focus on protecting the football, the defensive ends and the defenses that he has to place that you just play that you just named are doing just the opposite. They are focusing on getting that football out of someone who they feel they can get it out of his hand. So, yeah, this is elementary.
Yeah, Jenna, I actually think the quarantine is going to play a part in this because usually if the quarterback fumbles a lot, the go-to exercise is you have to hold the ball all through high school and the coach tells the other players to try to hit it out of your hand on your way to chemistry class. So it's going to be tough when he's just by himself and it's just his wife and his kids trying to smack the ball. I actually went with ranch hands, though, because the other little nugget in this story that was interesting was the fact that there's a lot of people helping the Cowboys. So Jason Garrett is former Cowboy, obviously, is helping Joe Judge because Joe Judge has never been a head coach. Then Danny Dimes is calling Tony Romo, and they got Cooper Rush in there. So there's all these former Cowboys helping him. So maybe it's a little bit of ball security that maybe the chemistry teacher can hit out. But overall, I think there's a good team atmosphere in New York.
I like it. I like it. All right, moving on to rookie Tua Tagovailoa. We already know he'll look good in his top-selling, most iconic Aqua jersey this season, but will he be wearing it on the sideline? A recent Sun Sentinel column says Tua should compete for the Dolphins' starting job. So, Nick, injury concerns aside, Tua being the Dolphins' week one starter would be blank.
Vindicating for myself and others that were screaming for the better part of 6 months, he's the best quarterback. Everybody knows he's the best quarterback in this draft. The doctors have cleared him. Quit being cowards and being worried about, well, what if his hip's not? He's going to be fine. Now, am I certain he's going to start week one? Of course not. I'm not certain any of the rookie quarterbacks, aside from Burrow, are going to start week one. But the fact that this is even on the board shows how ludicrous it was, the discussion that he might fall out of the top five, might fall out of the top 10. The guy had one of the greatest, statistically speaking, collegiate careers ever before he suffered that horrific injury. Looks to be almost fully healed from that horrific injury. So for me, at least, Jenna, this would be very vindicating. What say you, Greg?
I say it would be miraculous. I mean, you talked about it just now, like the injury that he suffered that we all watched and the career that he was having that he had already had. And for him to suffer that injury and then to potentially have draft stock just plummeting didn't happen. And now we're talking about someone, again, that we watched go through this injury and bounce back and can potentially start an NFL game week one for the Miami Dolphins. This is a credit to his diligence, his commitment to his body and getting back healthy. And I would love to see it. I truly would. I want him to be healthy, but I would love to see it.
You guys were very nice, and I really like Tua, but this would be an absolute nightmare horror show of epic proportions. I had Poltergeist for my answer. As a respectful ode to Sam I See Ghost Darnold, who Belichick destroyed 33-0, and that was in New York. Belichick is 12-0 versus rookie quarterbacks in Foxborough. That's where Tua is headed on September 13th, 1 p.m. Nick, I know it's a nice story, but this would be a nightmare. Nightmare.
You know what, Jen, I'm sorry, just real quick. Too. You know what the nightmare was?
Yeah.
You know what the nightmare was? The last time the Patriots played the Dolphins, if I remember correctly, Tom Brady was still the quarterback. It was the good old days. It's week 17. They have the bye right in front of them. And old Ryan Fitzmagic drives right down the field on you guys, steals that bye away, sets this whole thing into play so that maybe your reign over the Dolphins has ended. Maybe Fitzmagic ended that entire curse for the Dolphins franchise. Just putting it up.
Way to go, Wilds. You're done. The take is done. Let's get back to talking jerseys. Check out the Rams' new uniforms headed into the 2020 season. Twitter had a field day with these yesterday, but Nick, I'll let you decide. The new Rams' uniforms are blank.
Subject to smears like everything that goes on Twitter that's new. Listen, I'm on Twitter far too often. It's toxic. I shouldn't do it. I'm addicted to it. I understand. But everything new on Twitter, according to the people on Twitter, sucks. There has never been anything new that's good, whether it's today's athletes, today's colors, today's uniforms. Everything's awful if you listen to Twitter. The jerseys are fine. There's nothing wrong with the jerseys. Do I love them? Are they as iconic as the gorgeous, perfect Miami Dolphins uniforms? Of course not. But who else can say that of the 31 other teams? Nobody. They're fine. Greg, there's nothing wrong with these jerseys, Greg.
It's nothing wrong with the jerseys. They're clean. And when I say clean, I literally mean clean. Like, there is nothing on the jersey outside of the ram horn and the logo and the number. Like, that's it. Like, they're clean, and guys like clean, guys like simple, and they are. So you're right, Twitter is gonna bash anything that they see that is not in their favor and that they're not for. So I don't care what I hear on Twitter, the jerseys are clean.
Well, I'll tell you my favorite subplot of this whole thing, Jenna. I put Eric Dickerson fodder. Eric Dickerson, one of the greatest NFL players of all time, one of the greatest running backs of all time, one of the greatest American athletes of all time. But he is emerging as the single best uniformer critiquer in the history of the world. Look at this quote. In the horn, man, it's horrible. I just feel like they really took away from the Rams uniform, and it looks almost like the Chargers logo. It looks like two bananas. And this is football. This ain't nothing to do with surfing. Got nothing to do with waves. Eric Dickerson should be critiquing uniforms on a daily basis. He's phenomenal. It looks like two bananas. Get out of here. Eric Dickerson is the best. Give me the banana helmet. Gone.
In the history of unveiling new uniforms, have we ever, to Nick's point, read anyone on Twitter say, oh, I really like these. I like the color scheme. It's going to help us win. I got no problem with it whatsoever. No.
Yeah, Mighty Ducks.
No, you're right. Never Everybody happens. Hates everything new. Mighty Ducks.
Never.
Welcome back. Now joined by new New Orleans Saints wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders. Good morning, Emmanuel. Thanks for being with us. How you doing? How are you staying busy during quarantine these days?
I'm good. I'm on mountain time right now, so it's early out here. I had to wake up, but you know, I got to work out here in like 45 minutes to an hour, so it's okay to wake up early and talk with you guys. I mean, look at you guys smile. You know, the energy is right. I heard the conversations earlier. You guys are cracking me up, so I like you guys' personality. It kind of woke me up. You guys are my coffee this morning.
Love it.
Thank you, Emmanuel. It's incredibly kind of you. For people that don't remember, Emmanuel Sanders has played in 3 Super Bowls, has played with some great quarterbacks, almost played with arguably the greatest quarterback ever. Once upon a time, I thought you were going to go to the Patriots. I think you thought you were going to go to the Patriots. I'm curious, this offseason, when you were choosing between teams, you had a lot of options, a lot of teams courting you. What made you pick New Orleans?
I mean, if you just, I'm from Houston. You know, my family's close to there. To play with another Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew Brees is a dream come true. And a pass happy offense with Sean Payton. Michael Thomas as my counterpart. And, you know, several Pro Bowlers coming back. A great organization, a great city. I just feel like it was just a perfect fit for me. And truthfully, it's a blessing for me to be in this situation. You know, I'm 33 years old. You know, I don't know how many years I have left, but I've always wanted to be back in a pass happy offense. You know, I played in a pass happy offense in college for June Jones. In 2014, I played in Peyton Manning's system, and I've always wanted to get back in a pass happy system. And so that, all those elements right there is just the perfect fit for me, perfect fit for my family. And so, like I said, I can't say it enough. I'm blessed to be in this situation. And, you know, like I said, I got to work out here in 45 minutes. I've been grinding, trying to prepare for the opportunity so I can make the most of it.
Nick mentioned that you've been to 3 Super Bowls. Can you tell when you're on a Super Bowl team early in the season? Is there something besides just the playbook or the win losses that you've like, huh, I think this is a Super Bowl team?
Yeah, so, you know, I haven't been a part of a team like the Giants were, who, like, when they won it all, like, barely made the playoffs and, you know, got in and went on a run. I haven't been on one of those teams. I've been on one of those teams that from the jump, majority of the teams I've been on from the jump, like we'll start 8-0 with the Niners. With the Broncos, we started 8-0. With the Niners, I think we went 9-0. With the Steelers, we started off hot as well. And so, yeah, you can tell from the jump that we do have a team that's capable of winning a Super Bowl. But at the end of the day, we got to keep chugging along, because once the playoffs start, that's when teams start giving you their best, you know, the best of the best. And so it's crazy to think about that. You know, this is my 11th year coming up, and I've been on, you know, 3 Super Bowl teams. Unfortunately, I've lost 2 of those, but it's been a blessing all in all. And, you know, hopefully I see the same thing in New Orleans, and we can make this four straight Super Bowls. But at the end of the day, I got to win it, you know. And so hopefully, you know, even it out, make it 2-2.
So Emmanuel, as good and as talented and as successful as you are and have been, there's something to going to a new team. There's something about chemistry that you still have to get on the same page with a new quarterback, because you both haven't been on the field together. And obviously, because of the quarantine, we're separated. There's a lot of Zoom calling. But have you spoken to Drew Brees yet, one-on-one, on the phone? What do you guys talk about? How are you trying to get on the same page without actually physically being with each other?
Yeah, so I remember, you know, when I signed with the Broncos in 2014, after I spoke with Elway, 2 minutes after talking to Elway and pretty much signing my contract, I get a text message from Peyton Manning saying, hey, let's get ready to work. Excited to have you, blah, 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 blah. It was like, wow, man, this dude is excited to play with me like a true leader. And the exact same thing happened with Drew Brees. Like, right after I signed my deal, I spoke with Sean Payton. We were excited about it. And Drew texted me like, I'm happy to have you, ready to get to work. And I was just like, it's a reason why these guys are great. It's a reason why these guys are elite. And it's just crazy, the comparison. Obviously, we haven't had an opportunity to work out yet, but I got a feeling that I'm going to be getting a phone call here pretty soon from Drew saying that we're meeting at some location to work out, because you know, I'm looking forward to the gaining that chemistry. I've been, you know, working with my coach, trying to get the playbook and everything, and just trying to really do the best that we could possibly do, you know, with the circumstances at hand. You know, I think that I'll be fine with the playbook, and I think that I'll be fine with Drew. You know, we both, I feel like we both have similarities in the fact that we're passionate about the game, we're passionate about winning, and we want to put up points. So hopefully that's the advantage us.
Emmanuel, though, maybe the only thing missing from your resume, oddly, just kind of happenstance, is a playoff touchdown. Done all, basically everything else. You almost had the biggest of all playoff touchdowns against my beloved hometown team. I still have flashbacks about it. You'd beat the coverage. It's the game-winning Super Bowl catch. You've done your job. Ball gets overthrown, unfortunately. Do you still have visions of that? Like, how long are you over that? Or how long did it take you to get over that?
I don't know if it's a situation where I'll ever get over, but, you know, at the end of the day, it is what it is, right? It's nothing I can control and kind of got to let it go. Just, it was, you're from Kansas City. It was y'all's turn to win it all. And I firmly believe that, but I would be lying to you if I haven't been out on the football field and told the quarterback to give me a post route and simulated me catching it and running into the end zone and envisioning winning, scoring that game-winning touchdown. You know that right there could have been a legendary moment for me and Jimmy, but unfortunately it didn't happen. And so now, you know, instead of walking into, you know, airports and stores and everywhere I go, and people would have been like, "Great catch, man! You're a legend." Now they say, "Oh man, you were this close." So hopefully I don't go down as this close. But hopefully we can change that this year. But that's a play that will forever be in my mind for sure.
Emmanuel, when the schedule comes out, do you look at it in the totality of the schedule, or do you look at it in specific games? Like week one, you've got Tom coming into New Orleans. Are you like, this is going to be a shootout, I have to be extra prepared here? What's your mentality when you see the schedule?
Schedule really don't matter, but I do look forward to just to seeing, like, pretty much, like, how many road games, like, you know, how many back-to-back games. But one thing about the schedule, it's interesting, you know, when you ask me, you know, why did I choose New Orleans as well? Because I looked at their schedule prior, and I saw that they had, I think, 11 or 12 games inside in a dome. And I was just like, in this pass-happy offense in a dome, playing in the Superdome, I was like, this is perfect. You know, Drew Brees, a quarterback, I was like, this is perfect. So I'm looking forward to that, you know, coming from Pittsburgh to, you know, Denver to San Fran. I never had an opportunity for a dome to be my home turf. And so I'm looking forward to that, you know, because I feel like every time I played in the Superdome, it's a different energy. It's like playing in the Cowboys Stadium or the Vikings. It's just a different energy playing in the dome, at least for me. And so I'm going to enjoy that whole process.
What do you think, Emmanuel, surprised you the most this offseason between Brady going down to Tampa, Gronk unretired? This could be Aaron Rodgers last season. Cam doesn't have a team yet. What, as a player, were you like, wow, that one I didn't see coming?
You know what? I think it was really all of them. You know, one thing about the NFL, and that's, you know, you ask the coaches, you ask anyone, there's really no time off from the NFL. And, you know, every free agency period when the NFL comes around, it's always shockers and it's always surprising, you know, what happened. And I think that I just feel like I was just catching blows after blows. Like, oh, I didn't see that, you know, from Cam to I kind of figured Tom would leave, but the Gronkowski situation is what really got me. I was like, oh, Lord, we got to face this dude again. Because if you guys remember in 2015 when we played these guys in the AFC Championship, Gronkowski almost beat us single-handedly, and I wouldn't have a Super Bowl ring right now. I mean, this guy was just mossing everybody. I mean, Tom was just throwing the ball up to him. And so I was like, man, we got to deal with this guy again. And he's in my division. And so I just think the NFL offseason is just so interesting within itself. And I look forward to it every year because teams are trying to – no team – if someone says they're in a rebuilding phase, like, that's kind of weird for me because there's always opportunities to try to put a team together to try to compete and win a Super Bowl. And so – you look at the Broncos and what they've done. They've literally flipped their whole roster around, and now these guys, I feel like they're going to be good on defense, if you leave it up to Drew Lock and Drew Lock becomes Drew Lock, these guys could be dangerous as well and compete with the Kansas City Chiefs. So, you know, I always look forward to the NFL offseason because it's some team that will flip their schedule that we didn't expect, like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, and compete for a Super Bowl.
Right, right. Well, listen, I know you have a workout you got to get to. We don't want to hold you back from that. Good luck this season in New Orleans. We're excited to watch you. We got to take a break, though. Thanks for joining us. Coming up next, right. Rematch we've all been waiting for. Be right back. Tonight on FS1, relive the 2004 NFC playoff game. Packers-Eagles. Remember the infamous 4th-and-26 conversion with the game on the line? Fox Sports presents Greatest Games tonight, 8 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. All right, guys, time now for some stories to start your morning, sponsored by Ram Trucks, built to serve. We start up in Buffalo. Bill's new cornerback, Josh Norman, already putting some bulletin board material out there saying Buffalo would be, quote, a force in the AFC East with or without Tom Brady on the Patriots. Greg Jennings, you agree?
I do agree, and I believe a lot of that has to do with the young man we saw in the highlights. I know, Nick, you have an issue with Josh Allen. I actually like what I've started to see in Josh Allen, specifically in that postseason game against the Houston Texans. And then with Josh Norman not being the focal point on the defense in the perimeter at the cornerback position, you obviously have Tre'Davious White, who is a phenomenal cornerback. He will have his take and pick on your second and third best wide receiver, which should bode well for Josh Norman.
Well, Josh Norman needs to be grinding tape because there's another legend in the making, Greg. I think we have new footage that maybe Josh Norman could be studying. Belichick looks great. And, of course, the javelin, Jarrett the Javelin Stidham. There he is, Nick. It's a new Photoshop that we got in. New
Jarrett's
dynasty coming up in New England.
Bill Belichick.
Jarrett the Javelin throwing dimes all over the field like laser beams, Nick.
Well, listen, when talking about Josh Allen, using a javelin analogy is actually quite apropos. Throwing it wildly, hope it doesn't stab someone in the chest. Listen, I think Josh Norman is kind of right. I don't think the Bills' chances in the AFC East are affected that much by the departure of Tom Brady, because I don't think a 43-year-old Tom Brady would have been for the Patriots this year some force multiplier quarterback. But I do expect the Bills, who, by the way, I predicted on this show last year to make the playoffs, much to people mocking me, and then was proven correct. I expect the Bills to take a step backwards. And I know Greg was impressed by Josh Allen in the playoff game. I thought his running was good in the playoff game. I thought his receiving was good in the playoff game, catching that touchdown. But he is the quarterback. I thought his throwing was erratic in the playoff game. And I thought that lateral over his head at midfield was one of the most ludicrous things I've ever seen in an NFL game in my lifetime. So I'm not so high on the Bills this year. I do like Josh Norman a lot. And you're right about Tre'Davious White, maybe the best corner in football. But I don't think they go back-to-back playoff years this year, Jenna.
I'm excited to watch the Bills play, see what they can do. All right, moving on to some basketball now. ESPN released their top 10 NBA players of all time. Not too many surprises off the top. With Jordan going number one, LeBron 2, Kareem 3. Nick, how'd they do?
I must give credit where it's due. Their top 9 is the correct top 9, just slightly out of order. But they got the most important thing is you have to have LeBron, Michael, and Kareem as your top 3 unquestioned. They did. They just obviously have 1 and 2 incorrect. I'm a big believer of Duncan over Kobe. They got that right. I would have slotted Bird actually behind Duncan and Kobe. But aside from that, the 1 through 9 would be correct if you flipped MJ and LeBron. The only is Shaq. Shaq should be 13 on this list. 10 is Jerry West, 11 is Oscar Robertson, and 12, can someone put some respect on Hakeem Olajuwon's name? Hakeem Olajuwon, same draft as Jordan, made the playoffs every year of his first 11 years in Houston except one. They were above 500 or at 500 every year, unlike Jordan's Bulls. Year 2, the 86 season, Akeem takes the Rockets to the finals, and they take two games off Bird Celtics, the team that swept Jordan's Bulls. Year four in Houston, Akeem went 37-18 in a playoff series. So put some respect on Akeem's name, but otherwise, that was a. I think this was a really, really good job by ESPN's list makers. I think they did about as well as can be expected, unless it's my list. Go ahead, Wild.
I'm looking forward to your list, Nick. I'm interested in a separate list, and this is just really a question and some anecdotal evidence that I pulled when I worked alongside the NBA within the NBA at Bristol. That's what you call it, Bristol. Whenever I talk to players, Kobe was always super high on their list, and I feel like there's a disconnect between people who played and people who wrote about the game on where they put Kobe. And because I've listened to those guys, I always put Kobe super high. I also love Kobe, obviously. So I'm interested, and I hope maybe someone can start this. Maybe it's a LeBron thing. Maybe it's an uninterrupted thing of taking all the play, taking a bunch of players, take like 100 players, 200 players, and have them rank their top players and get a similar list, but only from people who play the game. Greg?
Yeah, I don't mind the list, but to your point, Wilds, it's still going to be impossible to get a locked-in list, even when you're talking about players, because players are going to side with guys that played in their era that they saw more frequently and that they feel like were tougher or they had a tougher road, whatever the case may be. So the lists are going to always be subjective to who's selecting and who's putting these individuals on that list and in those slots. I don't mind it because at the end of the day, whoever's making the decision, they're thinking, well, this guy, in my opinion, has the edge. And that's fine because in my opinion, Kobe is a little higher. In my opinion, Shaq is higher because I saw those guys with my own eyes. I didn't see a lot of the other guys play. So that's just my opinion.
All right, moving on now to the NBA's official game ball. Kind of a sad day for sports. For the last 36 years, it's been Spalding, but it'll change to Wilson starting with the 2021-2022 season. Greg, you know me, I'm more of a medicine ball kind of girl, so I'm not sure how big of a deal it is to me, but is this a big deal for the players?
This is a big deal. This is a really big deal. I was talking to one of my neighbors who plays in the NBA 2 days ago, and we were talking about name just the drop. Difference between basketball. I did not name drop. We're talking about the differences in just regular basketballs in the current basketball, in that they wouldn't pick up another basketball because the feel of that ball, it just changes everything. And I think players are going to have a challenging time. They're obviously going to have to adjust, but they're going to oppose it initially, and then they'll pick up where they left off and say that that's probably one of the best balls. But the fact that they're keeping the leather the same, that's huge.
Nick, I was actually kind of sad when I heard this news. So I put together a list of my five favorite basketballs. I know you're a list guy. I'd like you to react to this list. If we could put it up on the screen here. Coming in at number 99. It's top five, but I also got somebody at 99. The Molten International Ball. I've never touched it. I don't know anyone who's played with it. It's like when you go to another country and they've got a beer that you've never seen. Like, wow, I guess this is common here, but I've never touched it in my life. Number four, the Baden Elite. It's soft yet firm. It's like a pillow someone in Silicon Valley would use. It's like, what is this? How can it be soft and bounce well? Number three, the Ford F-150 of balls, the workhouse of basketballs. Any old random overinflated rubber ball laying around. You can find one half submerged in an alligator swamp. You take it out, you dust it off, and it's good to go. Number two, Spalding TF-1000. Holy cow, you feel like you need to wear a suit when you play with this ball. It's so beautiful, so high class. You just feel like tuck your jersey into your shorts when you play with the Spalding TF-1000. And the number one, the king of all ball basketballs, the Wilson Evolution. This thing will just pour buckets. It ages well. It's like Brad Pitt. Looks good, ages well. It's fantastic. The most wonderful ball. So I'm sad about Spalding, but Wilson Evolution deserves this, or Wilson, whatever Wilson ball they put out. Congratulations to Wilson.
Just, you know, anecdotally speaking, if you're running open gym at 24 Hour Fitness or whatever, the Wilson ball does seem to be more popular than the Spalding ball. So I think the NBA is making the right move. But nostalgically speaking, it makes me sad. Wilson already had a thing. Wilson was the volleyball in Castaway. And when you think Wilson, you think Castaway.
Don't tell me what happens.
Spoiler alert, Jenna, he makes it off the island.
Don't tell me what happens.
You think volleyballs and you think Wilson from the movie. When you think Spalding, you think basketballs. And now it's gone, so I don't know what Spalding has left anymore, Jenna.
All right, well, the ship sank in Titanic, so good luck with that one.
Beach volleyballs.
On to friend of the show, Enes Kanter. The Celtics' 27-year-old center still has plenty of basketball left to play in his career, but that hasn't stopped him from thinking about life after basketball. Take a listen.
Oh, I'm definitely becoming a WWE wrestler, for sure. I actually have this offers from WWE, but like, I'm like, hey, dude, I gotta finish my basketball career first. So like, after my career, I'm definitely becoming one.
Nick, what do you think?
Listen, it, depending on how long Enes's basketball career goes, we used to be enemies, now we're friends. If my television career is wrapping up, I'd make an appearance with him, a little Enes Kanter, Nick Wright tag team. Visually, it'd be funny seeing him and me. I think it could work out well. So Enes Kanter, new friend of mine, Enes Kanter, I support him fully in this. He's got to work on his wrestling defense because we know my friend Enes Kanter doesn't have much basketball defense, but hopefully he could be good at it once.
Yeah, Greg, I was talking to my neighbor who was a former WWE champion. I won't name who it was, but he says he'll be a great wrestler.
Yeah, he would be a great wrestler, I'm sure. I was talking to him the other day, too. No, I love it. I love when guys have a plan of attack after their career. It would be fun to see him in the ring, honestly.
All right, well, Nick, I'll pay any amount of money to see you in a leotard. Wrestling, whoever. On to some boxing now. That's where we'll finish up this morning. Our friends at Fox Bet have released the odds for a hypothetical Tyson Holyfield rematch. Don't feel attacked. Tyson would be a minus 250 favorite. Holyfield would come in as plus 200 underdog. That is gambling, I'm told. Nick, who you got your money on?
My money would be on Tyson, and Kevin Wildes has gotten me excited to the point that I think this event's actually going to take place, that Mike Tyson's going to make a comeback. I don't want to see him fight Holyfield again. I want to see him fight an actual boxer. I talked to Chris Mannix about this last night. He said Tyson couldn't fight a real boxer. I think Mannix is wrong. I want to see it in a real boxing match, Jenna.
We got to go. Much more First Things First tomorrow morning. See you then. Have a great day, everyone.